the president's top military advisor. General Martin Dempsey, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, will be stepping down this fall after serving 4 years. In that time, we've seen the sudden rise of the Islamic State, the continued downward spiral in Syria, also Russian aggression in Ukraine, and a more muscular China asserting military rights in the South China Sea. General Dempsey joins us now from the Pentagon. Welcome back to the program.
Good to be back.
And General Dempsey, that's a pretty bleak global picture, the way I framed it. Am I wrong?
Well, thanks for sharing that with me. I hadn't thought about it
in quite those terms yet.
No, actually, the way I describe it is that we live in a period of time where, for the first time in my career, we're actually facing potential state threats, that is to say state actors, and, of course, non-state actors, as you described, the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, ISIL. So we have a kind of an environment of increasing disorder, to be sure. And in the face of some of the budget constraints we're actually working through, I would also suggest we have some eroding military advantage. And so that makes for a pretty challenging environment.
Well, let's talk about some of those arenas. And first, I want to ask you about Iraq, because we've seen Islamic State forces overpower Iraqi government forces, seizing more and more territory. Most recently, the city of Ramadi, where Iraqi troops just melted away. They actually drove away, even though they vastly outnumbered the ISIS fighters. Secretary of Defense Ashton Carter recently said that the Iraqi forces haven't developed the will to fight. And I wonder if you agree with him.
Well, I've got some history, as you know, with the Iraqi security forces. I've actually seen them exhibit the will to fight. The real question, I think, that Secretary Carter was contemplating was, what do they have the will to fight for? In other words, for what will they fight, not do they have the will to fight? And it's an important distinction. And I think it gets at the state of Iraq today, where you've got three things that are kind of converging. One is that that governance is being established very slowly. They have not yet achieved a national unity government. There is this Sunni-Shia rivalry going on. And then in internal to Islam, there's a definite, let's call it, rivalry or competition between moderate elements and radical elements. And all three of those things, as they intersect, make for an environment which would test the resolve of any security force.
But would you have expected to see a different result by this point with so much U.S. involvement, so much U.S. training over the years?
Again, because of my experiences there, I would suggest to you that I have a pragmatic assessment of what's achievable and over what periods of time in a place like Iraq that is suffering from those intersecting challenges that I described. And so, you know, from the very beginning, if anyone were to go back and look at anything I've said about ISIL and about security and stability in Iraq, they would have heard me describe it in terms of multiple years. And that seems to me to be playing out that way. And therefore, I think this is going to take time. And so I'm not surprised that there's been this back and forth here in the early stages of what will be a long campaign.
You were in charge of training, I think, back from 05 to 07. Do I have those dates right?
I was.
Training Iraqi forces. When you say it will take time, how much time should it take?
I wouldn't be among those that might put a definite end date on it, as sometimes we do. But, I mean, I'll just give you some personal vignettes. When I was doing that training mission back in 05 to 07, we built a training range at a place called Besmaya, east of Baghdad, and brought Iraqi forces out there to do training. And as we did, we were trying to identify from within the ranks leaders who could be reliable and who could be courageous and who could be credible with the soldiers they were leading. And frankly, the first few times that we did that, it was a debacle. I mean, they just weren't able to come together as coherent units. Leaders weren't leading. They considered themselves to be entitled. They didn't understand that leaders actually have to serve the forces that reside under them. By the time 2007 came along, we had identified a group of leaders who we believed had the right instincts to be leaders and the right character. The point being, you can train someone to shoot a rifle in about a week. You can train someone to enter a village and cordon and search a bunch of buildings. You can do that in about a month. But it takes a long time to build a leader. And so I think what you're seeing here is the fundamental vulnerability of the Iraqi security forces is a vulnerability in tactical leadership. And we're working with them on that, but it's going to take time.
apart from the training, let's talk about coalition airstrikes in Iraq and Syria. There have been thousands since last August against Islamic State targets. Is there any evidence that that air campaign is working?
Yeah, there is. And it's not measured in terms of casualties produced, but rather in terms of disruption to command and control, disruption to their ability to resupply themselves. If you recall, when we started the campaign, they were moving with relative impunity across both eastern Syria and western Iraq. And they certainly can't move with impunity now because they're targeted. And so they are disrupted, both in terms of their ability to command and control, to resupply themselves. But they've also demonstrated a certain resiliency and the ability to recruit, in particular with a significant skill that they display in the social media.
If, though, let me just follow up on that point. If command and control was so severely disrupted, couldn't you make the argument that those few, relatively few, Islamic State fighters should never have gotten near Ramadi in the first place?
Well, look, when I talk about disrupting command and control, I'm talking about the ability of ISIL leaders in places like Raqqa in eastern Syria to communicate freely, to interact with ISIL leaders that may be in Mosul or maybe in parts of Al-Anbar province. A small tactical action. The Ramadi fight was a relatively small tactical action, but those kind of tactical command and control issues have, in some cases, been affected by the airstrikes, and in some cases have not. It really depends on our ability to generate the intelligence and the precision so that we know we're actually hitting the proper targets, the ISIL targets, rather than other tribal elements or popular mobilization forces. I mean, look, these forces generally don't actively seek to identify themselves to us. That is to say, ISIL's, you know, the days of ISIL rolling around in convoys of 50 vehicles with black flags flying and iPhones recording their movements to be posted on YouTube are gone. They're moving much more tactically now because the airstrikes have been effective. But the intermingling of these different groups on the ground, most of whom are in uniforms that are indistinguishable and unidentifiable to us, makes the use of air power challenging.
That's General Martin Dempsey, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Our conversation continues tomorrow on the program. We'll talk about the war in Syria.